The following is a Relevant Radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
Never knew such a love could be found. It's so amazing. I can taste, I can feel, I can see, for I am facing love divine. You are mine. Found me just in time. You are my all in all, love divine.
Bridging the gap for your morning drive, it's Morning Air with Sean Harriott.
What a maroon. What an ignoramus.
Along with Glenn Leverance, bringing you the news from the Vatican and around the world. And now, here's your host, Sean Harriott.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Morning Air. Thank you, Matt. And glad to be here. And we're going to talk about a couple of goings-on in the city of Detroit, one of them very positive, the work that the Capuchins are doing there and have been doing for a long time. We've talked about the amount of empty land in the city of Detroit, roughly the size, I believe it was, I saw a program about this, about the size of the city of Boston. The amount of vacant land and land with homes on it that need to be demolished. And there's been a movement to kind of take back the land and find some really positive things to do with it. And joining me right now is a couple of folks from Earthworks Farm, the Capuchin Soup Kitchen's Earthworks Urban Farm, meant to strengthen communities, one garden at a time, and the soup kitchen team with gleaners and created by the EAT program, Earthworks Agricultural Training. We're going to talk about that with Patrick Crouch, Program Manager of Earthworks Urban Farm, and Marilyn Barber, who is Earthworks Agriculture Training Director. Marilyn, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
And thanks for coming on the show. And Patrick, good morning to you, too.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, glad to. And the situation in the city of Detroit, obviously, it's just gotten more and more difficult for the people who live there, and the Capuchins have been there for a long time. Patrick, maybe you could start by talking a little bit about how this program came to be and what you're hoping to accomplish here.
Well, I think that the Capuchins obviously have a long history in Detroit. The monastery that is there has been there since 1883, and the soup kitchen has been open since the Depression. So the Capuchins have been trying to provide for folks basic food needs for many, many years now. And about 15 years ago, a Capuchin friar by the name of Rick Salmon decided that he wanted to look at alternative ways for increasing the access of quality food in the city. And that's when he started this garden. And at that point, it was somewhat of a simpler approach of just thinking that that by having access to better food, it would sort of address some of the basic issues. But over time, we've realized the complexity of that, that it's not just a matter of lack of access, but it's also the need for people to have a space to create relationships, to reconnect with the earth and with each other. And so it's really in keeping with the Capuchin ideals for this program. And then about 2 years ago, Nefra, Marilyn Barber, and myself began coming together and proposing this idea of this EAT program, where we'd actually take folks and train them to be new garden leaders in the city, to start their own projects and to start getting jobs in the developing urban agriculture field.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you actually been kind of doing this in terms of having the EAT program really up and going?
The EAT program is only actually on its second year, so it's pretty much in its growing stages. We like to think of ourselves as not just growing food, but also growing people. And so in the process of growing people is actually quite a bit more complex than growing growing food.
Yes.
So there's been a lot of challenges and learning for all of us.
So Marilyn, how many people are in the program right now?
Currently we have 12 students in the program.
Okay. And how what are their age ranges?
Anywhere from 22 to 57, I believe.
Okay. And what do you spend time helping them to learn to do?
Well, we have different components to the program. The main thing is the agricultural piece where they're learning how to mix the soil. They plant seeds. They plant in the greenhouse. They also plant in the hoop house as well as outside. Then they're learning how to harvest, to weed, and then at the end to sell the product at the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a part where the entrepreneurial part where if they have a business idea, then we help to expand that knowledge on how they can get started in their business. We have people to come in and do workshops so they can learn by example how it is to start a business and what it is that they could do to be more self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. So how long does the program last?
It's a 9-month training program.
Okay. Have you had a graduating class yet?
Our first graduating class was last year.
Okay. And how are things going with them? I mean, as you've kind of kept up with them and looked at how they've taken this knowledge and applied it.
Actually, everyone that graduated, they're almost like a new person. Mm-hmm. I know it's like 9 months and you're mm-hmm. like a baby is born. Mm-hmm. But with this 9-month same pattern, it's like a new person is born. And we have people that were homeless. Now they have homes that they're living in, people with no idea on what they could do with their life. They felt like this was the last string that they had to hold on to, and they got a new lease on life. You know, some of them got jobs as farmers, training young people, doing various things that they didn't think that they could do prior to the 9-month training. Mm.
Patrick, what did it take to launch a program like this?
Well, obviously, it took a lot of support by the Capuchins and Gleaners. You know, we do pay folks for being there because we recognize that the ability for folks that are, you know, are struggling with a lot of difficulties, they need to have some financial compensation is important.
Mm-hmm.
So that's certainly part of it, but I think a lot of it was a huge amount of community buy-in. We spent a lot of time talking with our friends and associates at other projects and learning what they thought of this idea and whether or not where they saw issues with it. And I think also just getting the initial recruiting was really difficult. The second year has been a lot easier for us because people that have been through the program are able to advocate and tell others about it. But the first year, folks are really kind of scratching their heads as to what we were trying to do, I think.
Mm.
So now that it's got a life of its own, but at first it was, you know, hard for people to conceive the idea.
Oh, definitely. So how much land are you using at this point?
The farm itself, you know, it's not really a farm in a lot of most mm-hmm. people's eyes, but it's 2.5 acres that are within about a block and a half of the Capuchin Soup Kitchen itself. Most of the land is very close. It's either owned by the Capuchins or Gleaners Food Bank.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with the two leaders of this wonderful program, the Earthworks Urban Farm, Patrick Crouch, Program Manager of Earthworks Urban Farm, and Marilyn Barber, Earthworks Agriculture Training Director. And Marilyn, Patrick was mentioning how it was, you know, a challenge to get the community to sort of see the vision and buy into it. What was it like, I would think, especially in those first weeks and months with that first crop of students, how did they feel? What was that experience like for them?
They were glad to be in a program where they could do something with their life, but I think that it was a lot of scattered energy, not knowing. I don't think anybody had a clue as to farming. We live in a city, and so therefore, you know, who farms in a city? Until recently, we just started farming. So that idea was relatively new. A lot of them pulled on memories of childhood, you know, visiting their grandparents mm-hmm. or someone in the South, how they helped them on farms. And so, and you know, as they started planting seeds, as soon as their hands really touched the soil, you could see memory coming back. Oh, I remember when I used to do this, that, or the other. So I think that that's something that's already in them, and the program helped to bring that out and to not have this energy scattered, but to bring it to one focus point where they could take this knowledge and use it at the end of the program to do something to and better their life.
Mm-hmm. And there is something really wonderful about seeing those plants begin to grow and seeing, you know, things blooming and the vegetables beginning to grow, and to know that you've done that with your own hands.
Oh, it's rewarding. And to see them, you know, like we're really disconnected from where our food comes from, because at one point we had tons of grocery stores. And so when you question children and you say, where do your food come from? And they say the grocery store. Mm. So they have no idea. When we had the first squash to bloom, I mean, everybody took pictures because they were amazed. They didn't know where squash came from, exactly how it grew. And then to see that they actually had something to do with this squash being here, it was like, finally, I've done something that I can be proud of in my life. Mm. And it was very life-transforming for them.
Mm. I'm talking again with Patrick Crouch, Program Manager of Earthworks Urban Farm in Detroit, and Marilyn Barber, who's Earthworks Agriculture Training Director. You can find out more at cskdetroit.org, cskdetroit.org, and more coming up as we talk about the Earthworks Urban Farm.
The call is urgent. The souls in need are many.
Relevant Radio has definitely impacted my conversion.
Your ministry is, I can't tell you how desperately it's needed in a culture that is just saturated with totally anti-Catholic, anti-life messages.
Listener supported. Relevant Radio.
I cannot begin to tell you how rich my life is because of this station. And I would cry if it ever went off the air.
Talk radio for Catholic life. Relevant Radio.
It really is the only thing I listen to anymore. Folks, if you value it, I mean, $5, $10, whatever you can do, it really is such an immense blessing that I can't even express it.
Help heal broken hearts, give hope to the hopeless, and help turn lives around. Donate online at relevantradio.com.
You can call with your gift, too. 1-877-291-0123. That's 1-877-291-0123.
Seventeen past the hour, you're listening to Morning Air and talking with folks from the Capuchin Soup Kitchen in Detroit. Capuchin Franciscans have been there for a very long time, making a difference. And one of the ways they're making a difference now is with the Earthworks Urban Farm Program. And we're talking with Patrick Crouch, Program Manager of Earthworks Urban Farm, and Marilyn Barber, who's Earthworks Agriculture Training Director. And Marilyn, right before the break, you were talking about just the light you'd see come on in people's eyes when they started to see that crop grow and realize this is something we've done. What was it like for them to actually harvest that food and take it to market?
You know, it was like a completion of like a circle where they actually completed. Because, you know, a lot of times you might give birth to a child and you have good intentions for that child, but somehow or another that child might go astray because it has its own ideas. But when you plant that seed does exactly what you want it to do. And to watch it bloom and to turn into this fruit that you saw the picture of maybe on the envelope seed packet or in a catalog, and you say, yeah, this is what I planted. And then to harvest that and to take it to market, and then the joy of saying, this is what I grew, when someone stands before you at a market venue and say, where did this come from? Was this grown here in Detroit? Mm. You know, and then they say, well, we just harvested this morning and with my hands. So that's a sense of pride. That's a sense of accomplishment. And that's something that we haven't had in a while. And you're talking about some of the people lived in shelters, and you know, you have like a 30-day limit on how long you can stay, and you're saying, well, what am I going to do in 30 days? Mm-hmm. Coming to the program, you know, gave them a new lease on life. Like, I can start planting gardens for people and make a living that way. I can go around to other shelters and offer them to plant their gardens, make a living that way. And that's a new lease on life, you know, and it's very transformative.
Mm, that is wonderful. That really is. And Patrick, you mentioned the challenge in sort of laying out this vision for community leaders, for folks that you hoped would support the program. How did they respond then after that first full cycle had completed?
Well, I mean, I think we had good support from the beginning. I think just folks were very concerned about how much hard work it was going to be and how difficult it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the probably the most significant things is how much we were actually seeing the demand for the folks we were working with to come and work on other projects. So, you know, we intentionally have wanted to sort of leverage the fact that we have this group of people that are able to do a lot of work and have had them come and support other people's projects.
Mm.
So, you know, doing garden consultations, doing hoop house builds, installing raised beds, all that sort of thing. And not too, it didn't take too long before word got around about how talented these folks were. And, you know, Marilyn was having all these phone calls for people trying to get work days scheduled. So I think very quickly, you know, people realized that this was not just a great opportunity for the people involved directly in the program, but it was also a great opportunity for other projects throughout the city.
Mm-hmm. And this also addresses another huge need in the city of Detroit, and that is for good food. I worked in the city for about 10 years. I didn't live there, but I certainly saw what was happening in the city. One of the things that really struck me was when the last grocery store in Detroit closed, so that most people are having to get their food from convenience stores. There are a few, I suppose, corner markets left, but it's mostly convenience stores. So how's that making a difference? I mean, in terms of the way, I would think, Marilyn, that this is making a difference in the way that those participants see the food that they eat, and that's something I think they would probably take home with them as well.
Yes, and also in growing the food themselves, it's sort of like they see that there's not really a need for grocery stores. It's when you have the markets where people are eating what they grow and it's coming locally, then that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
It should be. You should know your farmer. And in the little corner stores should be stores that sell things that are relevant to the people that live in that community. That's the way things were, and that's the way it should return. And we have that perfect opportunity, because certainly I don't think they have any plans for any more major grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
So we've learned to survive without them, and having harvesting our own food, where like we have canning classes where people can learn how to can their foods. We also have season extension where they can utilize hoop houses to grow like salads and spinach, mm-hmm. and things like that in the wintertime.
Oh, that is amazing. And Patrick, you mentioned that other programs want to use your graduates. I mean, do you see this as a movement that's growing?
Well, I think that there's a really a wave of energy surrounding this. That's really, it feels as though it's building. And in some ways, I never could have imagined 10 years ago that we would be seeing the amount of interest, literal international attention of people coming to look at what's happening in Detroit. So, I mean, I certainly see it expanding for some time. We do have so much access to land, and there are so many issues with access to quality food, and as well as people having economic opportunities. So it's a huge win-win in so many ways.
Mm. Marilyn, do you have another class of 12 this year?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We're planning graduation in November.
Oh, that's wonderful. So are you hoping to expand the program eventually?
We're somewhat challenged as far as space is concerned,
mm-hmm.
but the whole idea when we started was for this to be a model that other people in other communities could see what we're doing and utilize the resources that they have and come up with a training program similar to this.
Mm-hmm.
Not only training, but a place where people can, you know, because it's more than just a training. You have to deal with people from the level that they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of them come with baggage, and you have to deal with that, because this baggage that they're carrying it's so out of sync with reality that you need to be able to refer them to other resources where they can straighten out those kinks and then continue living. But just to say that Patrick and I can just come up, create this program and it'd be the answer for the whole city, that's a bit far-fetched. But if other churches could utilize the resources that they have and start a program similar, that would create this wonderful wave in the city of Detroit.
Yes, that really would create that dynamic you were talking about where people really eventually could even start to see that whole food chain a bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something so incredibly transformative about people discovering the dignity of work in terms of realizing there is something I can do that makes a difference. It seems like so much of the hopelessness that you see in the city of Detroit is just on the part of people who really, they don't see anything getting better in their lives, and they don't really see any way to change the circumstances that they're in. How has the program, you mentioned, the way that people began to see themselves in the program as you've kept up with people. How are you seeing them now a year later? How are their lives?
Completely different. When we first started the program, we did something like a dream map, if you will, and for them to express what it is that they felt that they could do in life and how this program could empower them to do that. And I think this was like a vehicle to help them find their true voice. And this is where we started seeing this birth coming forth. And so once they did that, we used the remainder of the month to sort of like feed into their vision. And they, believe it or not, just transform by sharing, because a lot of times we have things within our heads and we say that we're going to do it. Mentally, we might plan to do it, but never have we had the courage to actually speak it forth. And then speaking it forth empowered them to say, wow, I said it. Now I'm going to do it. And so they slowly work toward that. And so when you see them, they're not the same person that they were when they first started the program.
That is beautiful. Well, Patrick, do you see any kind of expansion down the road, or are you just hoping to keep the program kind of the way it is? Marilyn talked about the space challenges there.
Well, I think that one of the things that we're very reluctant to do is recognizing that all nonprofits right now are really strapped for resources, and their ability to pay for this additional programming is something that we're always concerned about. So one of the things that we're very careful about is thinking about how can we do this in a way that doesn't necessarily drain the Capuchin's resources. So currently, any sort of expansion we're doing is based upon community interest. So we are incubating some projects on our land. So there's a gentleman who wants to do vermicomposting, so that's composting with worms.
That's wonderful. Well, Patrick, unfortunately, we're out of time. Thank you so much.
Today's the feast day of St. Vincent de Paul, the man from whom those charitable institutions take their name and inspiration. Hi, I'm Father James Kubicki, and though our saint didn't actually start the St. Vincent de Paul Society, he is certainly a good model for them and for every Christian. Back when I was in high school, there was a popular folk song that went, "They'll know we are Christians by our love." That's the secret of holiness. And so it should be no surprise that Pope Benedict's first encyclical was about God's love and the charity that it calls every Christian to. Here's what he wrote. Love will always prove necessary, even in the most just society. There is no ordering of the state so just that it can eliminate the need for a service of love. There will always be suffering which cries out for consolation and help. There will always be loneliness. There will always be situations of material need where help in the form of concrete love of neighbor is indispensable. The state, which would provide everything, would ultimately become a mere bureaucracy, incapable of guaranteeing the very thing which the suffering person, every person, needs, namely loving personal concern. This love does not simply offer people material help, but refreshment and care for their souls, something which often is even more necessary than material support. In the end, the claim that just social structures would make works of charity superfluous masks a materialistic conception of man, the mistaken notion that man can live by bread alone.
In 1971, Kathy Rush was a woman ahead of her time. She had the faith to dream big and the passion to change lives. The Mighty Max, based on the inspiring true story of Tiny Immaculata College that became the first Cinderella team in women's basketball. Starring Carla Gugino, David Boreanaz, and Academy Award winner Ellen Burstyn. Sometimes, when you believe in a dream, miracles do happen. The Mighty Max. In theaters October 21st, rated G.
If you live near Chicago, Milwaukee, or the Twin Cities, you're invited to a free preview of The Mighty Max Tuesday evening, October 11th. Reserve tickets for your family or friends by visiting catholicscreenings.com/relevantradio. Tickets are limited, so go there now. catholicscreenings.com/relevantradio. See the inspiring true story about Tiny Immaculata College making sports history. Opens everywhere October 21st.
Comforting you in a time of need.
This is Relevant Radio.
I'm calling because my brother, he's my best friend, but he's fallen away from the faith. He doesn't pray. He doesn't think it's necessary. I want to know what I can do for my brother.
Monsignor Stuart Sweatland on Go Ask Your Father.
I would say that what you can do, first of all, is be a very good brother. To pray and sacrifice, as you say, you're fasting for your brother, that's a very good thing. Continue to do that, but to show the joy and peace of the faith in your life. Try to get to the roots of his anger with God.
Okay, Father, thank you so much.
You have the prayers of the people of God who listen to the Relevant Radio, and there's thousands of them, praying for Jim and his brother, that you are reconciled and that you can help win him back to the Lord.
Your virtual parish.
Listener supported.
Relevant Radio.
This is Monsignor John Cozart, National Director of the Pontifical Mission Societies in the United States. Growing up in Thailand, Anorak watched her friends marry and start families. But she says, "My heart always wanted more." Today, she is a religious sister, reaching out to rescue girls from human trafficking and slavery. Sister Anorak's family now numbers in the thousands, taking in not only those girls she cares for, but also the families in the tribal villages. While we love and serve those in our own families, we are called as well to reach out, at least in prayer, to our brothers and sisters around the world. It's a lesson from the missions.
Brought to you by the Pontifical Mission Societies. To learn more about becoming a missionary right where you are, visit our website at onefamilyinmission.org. Remember, if you're baptized, you're a missionary. Through prayer and sacrifice, in word and witness, we're all part of this one family in mission.
We live in a world that wants to deny religion a place in the world. There's a growing movement of virulent secularism that would say, don't say anything about religion, faith, God. You keep that to yourself and don't foist it on me. And yet we know that as people of faith, our values influence everything that we do.
If we stay connected with God, then we're going to end up being kind to one another and kind to ourselves, and we're going to end up in heaven, which is what the goal is for everybody. If we don't pray, we're going to get caught up in all of these values that the world subscribes to. Work harder, work longer, make more money, get more things, and we're going to get crazy.
If you've heard this, then you know you've been listening to Relevant Radio.
Six minutes in front of the hour. You're listening to Morning Air. We've got Glenn's Story Corner coming up
in a few minutes, and we have some relevant radio pilgrimage pilgrims on a relevant journeys pilgrimage through Spain. And Father Rocky is helping to lead that pilgrimage, and he is on the line with us. Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Sean. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, actually, you sound like you're next door.
Isn't that amazing? I am not next door. I am in the shadows of the Pyrenees in southern France, and it is now about 1:35 in the afternoon. So that is extraordinary what we can do with modern technology and telecommunication.
It really is. It really is. So what's the trip been like so far?
It has been fabulous. Out of 4 stars, it's 5 stars. Can you hear me, or do we just disconnect?
We just broke up a little bit. We can still hear you, though.
Okay. The weather has been glorious, and it's a nice pace of pilgrimage. We spent 2 days.
Hey, Father, I'm sorry. We are breaking up. Let's go ahead and try to reestablish contact here. And I'm going to remind you that Relevant Radio is listener-supported. We so much appreciate your support of Relevant Radio, so please do consider a gift. You can call us 877-291-0123. That's 877-291-0123, or online at relevantradio.com. That number again, 877-291-0123. To live, to learn, to work, to pray. Welcome to St. Lawrence Seminary High School. College prep and spiritual depth. Explore St. Lawrence Seminary High School for your son at stlawrence.edu. That's stlawrence.edu. Still trying to get Father Rocky back there. We had a great connection until we didn't. So, Father, you're back with us.
Thank you, Sean. Yes. So we've spent 2 days at the Shrine of Our Lady at the Pillar in Zaragoza. 2 days at Our Lady of Montserrat, and then 2 days at Our Lady of Torre Ciudad in the foothills of the Pyrenees. And now we're spending the last 3 days at Our Lady of Lourdes. And the weather here is fabulous. It gets down in the 50s at night, and during the day it's sunny, blue skies, about 70 degrees or so. And Lourdes is really quite extraordinary. There are currently about 20,000 pilgrims here. Mm. Many have come from Italy for their annual pilgrimage for the Italian Red Cross. Each evening there is a candlelight procession of the rosary, and we pray the rosary in, it must be at least 6 or 7 languages, French and Italian and Spanish and English and German and Polish and Latin. And at the end there is a procession of the image of the Blessed Mother. And it's something else. I mean, it really is a very, very Catholic place. I mean, people come here from all over the world. This morning, most of our group went through the ritual of bathing in the baths. Now, this water is crystal clear, but freezing cold. We're talking capital C, capital O, capital L, capital D. It's like a new baptism, but it's a great experience because you're sitting there in line, and the rest of humanity is there, young and old, rich and poor, male and female, healthy and terribly ill. You see people on ventilators. You see people who are in gurneys because they have been just, their body's been contorted through cerebral palsy. You see people who clearly are suffering from cancer because they have no hair on their head. Mm. And everybody is waiting and hoping for some sort of grace, whether it be a physical healing or especially the strength to carry on. And what's so amazing about this place is everyone is happy. Everybody is happy here. And it's like they're all your long-lost friends, and even though you never met them before. We met a group from Los Angeles. There was a group here from the Philippines. There's a group here from Ireland. There's a group here from Germany. It really is quite something to see this. We were really fortunate the very first morning here yesterday. We will have Mass with our group in English outdoors at 8:30 a.m. right at the spot where the Blessed Mother appeared to St. Bernadette 18 times. It's called the Grotto. And Juan Landa, who organizes these trips, has been coming here for 10 years. He said it's only the second time we've been able to have the priest of our group be able to officiate at the Mass.
Oh,
so
wow.
We're very happy with that. And this evening we're going to watch the movie about St. Bernadette. And at 5 o'clock we'll be in the Corpus Christi procession every afternoon. I give a half-hour talk on some aspect of the life of the Blessed Mother. And tomorrow we'll have a chance for the Stations of the Cross. And Thursday, we get on the jet and we fly home. And each of these shrines is in a magnificently beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm.
And each Marian shrine has its own characteristics. I would say, and the characteristic of the Shrine of Our Lady of Montserrat, it is the cultural center for the Catalonian people, much as Our Lady of Guadalupe is the cultural and religious center for the Mexican people. This is kind of the rallying point for the people from the northeast of Spain. The Shrine of Our Lady of Torreciudad, nestled high on a ridge above a magnificent reservoir of water in the Pyrenees Mountains, that's a very quiet place, a place for prayer and true spiritual conversions. It's distinguished by the 40 confessionals they have there, and it was really a testimony of St. Jose Maria to his love for the Blessed Mother for all she had done to him during his life. And then the Shrine of Our Lady of Lourdes is very, very international. It's all about healing, and so people come here literally from all over the world. In the year 2008, which was the 150th anniversary of the apparitions of Our Lady, 9 million people came here. And that's on average like 35,000 people a day. And this is a small town with narrow streets.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a unique flavor all to its own, but we're very, very blessed to be here, and we're praying for everyone at Relevant Radio. And again, the theme of my trip here especially was to thank the Blessed Mother for her powerful intercession, for all she's done to help us at Relevant Radio, and so we're happy to do that.
Oh, that's wonderful. And I know that when it was being promoted here on the air, they mentioned that the pace of the pilgrimage was a bit slower than other pilgrimages people may have experienced. What's that been like, just being in the same place for a few days, and it sounds like maybe having a bit more kind of leisure time?
You know, I think it's outstanding. In fact, at Montserrat, we're there for two nights and a full day, and I said, you know, that's still not enough time to take that all in.
Yes.
As well, at Torreciudad, we're there for two nights and a full day and a half. It's still not time enough. Here at Lourdes, we're here for four nights and 3 days, but there's so much to absorb. Just like the mosaics of the joyful mysteries in the Church of Our Lady, these are extraordinary works of art. You could spend a half hour looking at each one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think this is about the right pace. You know, if you just kind of hop around from place to place, you don't absorb. In fact, I was here at Lourdes for about a day or a half day in 1997 on my way to a World Youth Day. And it was extraordinarily crowded at that time, jam-packed with all of the young pilgrims. And I missed most of it.
Mm.
I missed most of it. I really think if you're going to do it right at one of these major Marian shrines, you've got to set aside the time for it. And the accommodations are clean. The food is delicious. The people are great. And we're able to survive with English,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the French and the Italians and Spanish are very accommodating that way, although Juan Landa seems to be fluent in just about every language.
He's amazing.
He's amazing.
I've seen him switch from English to Italian to Spanish without missing a beat. It's pretty incredible.
And it's clear he really has a vocation to do this kind of service. I mean, I would never come on a pilgrimage with anybody else.
Yes.
I mean, he's thought it all through. It's the right tone. It's the right pace.
Mm-hmm.
It's a spiritual pilgrimage. But we also have a lot of fun, as he mentions in his promotions. We're very fortunate, really, that we can partner with somebody who's so trustworthy and understands what a spiritual pilgrimage should be about.
Mm-hmm. For years before I actually went on a pilgrimage last year, earlier this year, I heard people tell me how amazing Juan's pilgrimages were, and now I've joined that group. I mean, it is a wonderful experience, and Juan does a great job just with the combination of really rich spiritual experiences, but also making sure that you get the flavor of the country, that you really get to enjoy the history and the beauty of somewhere like Spain.
Yeah. You know, one of the most breathtaking points of the journey was coming across the Pyrenees on a bus. And I've seen mountains in other places of the country, the Rocky Mountains and the mountains out in Utah, but this is absolutely breathtaking. It's like right out of the movie, The Sound of the Music.
Mm-hmm.
You almost feel like singing the hills alive.
Well, that's great. Father, thank you for spending some time this morning, and I hope the rest of your pilgrimage is equally wonderful.
And thanks for checking in, and thanks for keeping our audience and let them all know that we are praying for them every day here at Our Lady of Lourdes.
All Thanks, right, Sean. We'll do that. Thank you, Father. It is 16 minutes in front of the hour. Glenn's Story Corner is coming up, so stay with us.
Relevant Radio's Father Rocky is traveling across the country visiting with listeners and joining them in prayer for their intentions.
We're at the Focus Conference in Baltimore. There's over 1,000 university students here, and we ran into Rosemary and Father Austin with the NCDVD. That's the National Conference of Diocesan Vocation Directors. Hey, everyone, let's say Hail Mary for vocations. Hail Mary.
Full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen.
Praying for an increase in vocations to the priesthood to serve God's people. This is, can you say Relevant Radio?
Relevant Radio.
Can you say Relevant Radio?
Relevant Radio.
Can you say Go Bears?
Go Packers.
I knew it.
Email your prayer intention to Father Rocky at myintention@relevantradio.com. Praying for your intentions today and every day. This is Relevant Radio.
It's 15 minutes in front of the hour. You're listening to Morning Air. We'll get to Glenn's Story Corner in just a moment. And Glenn, boy, Father Rocky's description of what's going on during that Relevant Journeys pilgrimage, it just makes you want to be there, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That's just I didn't ask Father if his Spanish was getting a workout, but I'm sure it was. It's a nice thing to be in a country and be able to converse in the native language. That helps. But as he said, the Spanish, very accommodating. I found the folks in Bavaria to be just really wonderful about that. That Dr. Helen Sheska had told me that if you make an attempt to speak German, just any attempt at all, as pathetic as it is, they will just jump right in and help you. And that was what I saw over and over again. But there's something really, really nice about being in a place like that for a couple of nights and really getting to know the area just a little bit, you know, being able to walk around, figure out where your favorite little place is to have coffee or whatever the local, specialty is. I don't know if they have tapas there or what the specialty is in terms of food, but it's a lot of fun. We stayed in Bavaria for, I'm not sure if it was two or three nights. It was for the Passion Play there in Oberammergau, and we stayed in Oberammergau. It was at least two nights, maybe it was three nights. And then we kind of hopped around a bit. We were in Munich one night and then went to Bologna and Assisi. And I think my favorite places were Oberammergau because we got to be there for so long and we got to visit some other places. We went to Altötting, which is the home of a shrine that Pope Benedict loves very much, and just kind of walk around these places. I walked around Altötting a little bit, walked around Oberammergau, and it's just fun to sort of try to navigate things and get to know the area. Did that in Rome too, but that's, you know, the dynamic there is a little bit different. So Stacy and Julie went with another pilgrim in Munich as well. They took the train and went downtown in Munich, and it's really cool. No, actually, that was Rome also. But it's really great to be able to just get a sense of the place. Now, when you were in China, did you really get to do much of that?
Well, I was going to say we were kept pretty busy. And part of that was we were watched as well by the government,
so yes,
we had to kind of
yes.
keep on a busy tourist schedule. But
right.
Another similar trip in India afforded a little more time to do that, to go shopping on our own. And, you wanted to, you know, leave whatever sort of a kind of trail of breadcrumbs when you walked a few blocks away to make
yes.
sure you found your way back. But I found that in traveling in both spots, though, when you're on your little tour bus going from place to place, you know, just being like a dog with your head out the window, just looking and absorbing like crazy.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Because Father was talking about driving through the Pyrenees, and we drove through the Alps it was in Austria. As we were going from Germany to Italy, we passed through Austria and went over the Alps, and it is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. And like Father said, you know, he'd been to the Rockies, and I've been there too, and
you know, grew up around some beautiful scenery, grew up, you know, going to Mount Rainier on a regular basis and Mount St. Helens and Mount Baker, which is north. So we had a lot of opportunities in terms of mountains and forests and that sort of thing where I grew up. But, boy, I tell you, the Alps there in Austria were just absolutely breathtaking. So something pretty wonderful about being able to just stand there and take it in. Even if you don't have a ton of time, there are moments where you can just do that.
You know, in the China-India experience, it was kind of taking in the sea of humanity that was there, looking at the people, especially in India. We pulled up to one small village where we were going to pass out Bibles and literacy certificates. We had to wait for them to get the tent all set up and not kind of burst out and be waiting on the scene and embarrass them, so we're waiting in the bus. Meanwhile, all the village children are popping around, and they never see this. They never see white faces there. And so kind of remember playing peekaboo out, you know, in and out of the windows of the bus with these little kids. And I remember two, there might have been sisters, they're probably 7, 8 years old, 9 years old. And I think if they'd grown up in America, they could have gone on to be supermodels, just the most beautiful little faces.
That's
and
great.
Who knows, you know, what their life will have in store. And then also in Delhi, India, a larger city yet, the bus being pursued by beggars very actively, like a 12-year-old boy with a maybe a two-week-old baby in his arm being held like a football and for begging purposes. And being,
we saw some jogging, of that in Rome, too.
Jogging after the bus for blocks. Mm. Yeah,
yeah, we were eating on the street in Rome, just down from the Vatican. I mean, like half a block from the Vatican. And there was a gal there, a lot of Roma, a lot of gypsies, and there was a gal there with a baby. And she started working Julie pretty hard. Because Julie was like, "Mom, can't you give this lady something? She's got a baby." And Juan was explaining to us that a lot of these folks, they'll get dropped off in the morning by their spouses in the car, and then they'll get picked up at 5. So it's kind of their job. And the priests and religious that we met all said, "Don't give them stuff." And there was also another guy who was apparently just a fantastic actor. Some of the folks told us that he was there every day, and he walked as though he was just in incredible pain and had a, you know, disability. And people said that they would see him when he was done with his shift, basically kind of straighten up and go catch the bus. So you had to be kind of careful about that. But one of my other, before we get to Glenn's story corner here, one of my other just great moments was when we went to Assisi, and there's Lower Assisi, where you have the Church of St. Clair, and then there's Upper Assisi, which is the original town, and that's where the church, the Basilica of St. Francis of Assisi is. And when you walk out of the Basilica, there's a there's kind of a wall. It's a street, but there's a, you know, just a wall you can lean against. But you can look out and see this just gorgeous panorama as you look in Lower Assisi and the farmland around it, and just amazing. And that was one of those moments for me where it was like, and I was waiting for the tour group, and Julie and Stacy had gone off with other people. So I was alone at that moment and had maybe 10 minutes. And I just thought, man, I need to just stand here and take this in, because this is a moment I will remember the rest of my life. So it's pretty amazing to have those moments. And Juan Lenda does such a great job of giving you the opportunity for those moments too on those pilgrimages. Check Father Rocky's progress, by the way. On Facebook, just look for Father Rocky on Facebook. He's posted some gorgeous pictures and talked a little bit about his experience and the experiences of the pilgrims, too. Let's go to Glenn now for Glenn's Story Corner.
Our story today is called What Are You Listening For? By Joseph Mazzella. I remember reading a story once about a wealthy businessman who, over the years of his travels, had formed a friendship with a Native American. This pair, in spite of their differences, remained close, and after many years, the businessman finally convinced his friend to visit him in the city where he lived. As they were walking down the busy streets full of noise, traffic, and people, the Native American suddenly stopped, walked into an alley, and bent down over a small plant growing there. His friend followed him and found him listening to a tiny cricket chirping. Amazed, the businessman asked him how he ever heard that little sound among the deafening noise of the city. The Native American just smiled and said, "What you hear is what you listen for." As they walked back to the street, the Native American took a handful of coins out of his pocket and dropped them on the pavement. The businessman smiled as he saw a dozen heads turn toward the sound. He realized what his friend had meant. What are you listening for in this life? Are you listening for the latest lottery numbers to be announced? Or are you listening for the sweet songs of birds in the morning? Are you listening for the newest gossip people are saying? Or are you listening for the happy sound of your children's laughter? Are you listening for the shouting voices of anger and hatred in this world that try and fill our ears and hearts with their poison? Or are you listening for the gentle voice of God whispering to you, "I love you, my child"? Either way, what you listen for is what you'll hear. Open your ears, mind, heart, and soul, and then listen. John 10:27, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me."
Hey, if you'd like to share a story with us for Glenn's Story Corner, send us an email, morningair@relevantradio.com. That's morningair@relevantradio.com. And we didn't plan that, just another little reminder of appreciating those moments when they come. And, you know, there are times that you have those moments in life and you don't realize it at the time. And so kind of looking back, you try to reconstruct it, which can be a little bit more difficult. And there are those moments, too, where you know, man, this is a moment I'm going to remember the rest of my life. Or I want this to be a moment I'm going to remember the rest of my life. And so you can take the time to really pay attention. And there's something pretty wonderful about that.
Even the absurdly wonderful moments, like being on the Great Wall of China and thinking, wow, this is like a really great Disney replica. I can't believe I'm at the real one.
That's cool. That's great. We didn't make it up to Beijing when we were in China. Some of the folks that we met there and the people that we still have relationships with, some of them went before they came down to Changsha. I don't think anybody did it on the way home, because all you want to do at the end of any trip like that is go home. And certainly when you got a baby in tow, that's definitely the case.
But, you know, and even for the folks who can't make these exotic trips, I mean, think back as a child, the spots you recall, you know, in your youth on a family vacation. It might have been just up at the lake, you know, up north or wherever. And you have strong memories of that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. for the kids, I mean, something we might as adults think is just every day might be one of those lifetime memories for them.
Yes. The one thing that Julie seems to remember from our trip to Italy last year was that her birthday, it was the day of the papal audience. And so she's kind of, and I don't really blame her. She's complained about it just a little bit. Every time we mention the pilgrimage now, she'll say, well, yeah, my birthday, we had to sit for 4 hours and wait for the Pope. And we did. We did. But we also, the thing that I will remind her is, yes, and then right after that, we had lunch and the entire restaurant sang happy birthday to you. And probably half the people on our pilgrimage snuck you presents. So I think
there was some upside there after all.
It was so sweet because we kept saying to people, yes, Julie's birthday is coming up. Because, of course, she may have happened to mention it to everybody. But we did say to people, hey, don't feel any obligation to get her anything. She's fine. We had gotten her some stuff and she was going to have a party when we got home. But, they're just kind. And so they got her some neat things that she still has, and those are really treasures too, because they remind her of her trip. And actually, one of the things she got was just a hat, a pink hat that says Roma on it. And we've got some pictures of her in that pizza place with the Roma hat on, and she still very much enjoys having the hat. So sometimes it's those little things. It's not necessarily the treasure that you got, but it's those little things. I got a friend of mine in a gift shop in Guangzhou. There was a novelty wristwatch that had a picture of Chairman Mao, and his arms were the hands of the clock, and it was just very strange and tacky. And I thought my friend would enjoy it, and he did. But I sort of regret I didn't get one for myself, because I think I would probably enjoy that. I'm not sure what I would do with it. I'd never wear it, but I think I'd enjoy having it.
Well, we like, though, that you're inviting listeners to provide you with strange and tacky items, though. I think we all heard that loud and clear, didn't we,
yes,
listeners?
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, Glenn. Hey, we've got news for you coming up from the Vatican and around the world. Sean Harriott, Glenn Leverins, thanks for joining us for this hour of Morning Air.
Thanks for listening to this hour of Morning Air on listener-supported Relevant Radio. For information on guests and topics, go to relevantradio.com and enter keyword Morning Air. That's relevantradio.com, keyword Morning Air.